Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dr. Kenny Burdine, Extension Professor with the Department of Ag Economics. Our weekly topic will be the cattle market and the interaction between grain prices and cattle market prices. As always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy our show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
How's David today?
Pretty good. Doing real well.
Got those Halls cough drops in front of you ready to
go? Yeah, the ones you can't find in Dixon, right. By the way, though, the geographical anomaly that exists in Dixon, Kentucky.
Did you source those here in Lexington since we've been here?
No, sir. I bought a big bag in Hopkinsville.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. Well,
I did purchase a bag. No, I didn't. I didn't purchase them. They were my grandmother's. And I gave them to him so he would
have
some.
That's true. Yeah. Well, yeah. I've been through them.
Yeah.
Already been through them.
Folks in Hopkinsville will tell you quick that if you need it, it comes from there. And if it don't come from there, you don't need it.
Right. So. That's right. But it doesn't. None of it comes from Dixon. So
that's right.
None of it comes from Dixon.
Geographic
anomaly.
Anomaly.
Yeah, that's what I call it.
It's what Dixon is.
But we get a little rain.
The only thing y'all had this year.
I don't hear that now. Here we go again. All summer long, it's Vicky's rain. This is rain at Vicky's every time it's raining in the state of Kentucky. It's rained in Webster County.
Group
all
text,
summer long.
Be pictures it's of the raining. Rain. Look what it's I raining. See. It's raining here.
So yeah, but anyway. Other than that it is a geographical anomaly, other than the rain. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's a pretty good place.
Yep.
It is. It is. Well, we also know that's where the greatest ag agent in the state comes from.
Oh, I forgot about that.
We were told that. They don't have no cough drops. But
by a guess, Kenny, no less, that mm-hmm. Vicky was the greatest ag agent in the state of Kentucky. Yeah. As Jay and I were sitting there, it's not like we were sitting there,
right.
Too.
And I just smiled.
I have the edit buttons. Remember that? Oh, me. Well, with us today, Dr. Kenny Burdine. We're glad to have you with us. It's like I said, you had spoke some with David before, and we appreciate you coming back to us and sitting down for a whole show this time. So,
well, thanks. Good to be with you. Looking forward to visiting with the three of you.
For all of our listeners, if you don't care, just tell us a little bit about yourself, how long you've been with UK, and all those good things.
Be glad to. So, name's Kenny Burdine. I actually grew up just south of where we're recording this today. I grew up in Jessamine County. Actually been at UK for, let me think, I'm in my 23rd year. Started in 2000. I did my graduate work part-time. So I've been at UK now for over 23 years, and I've been on faculty since 2012.
The awesome. Drought. The drought year.
Yeah, that's a good year to start.
That's right. That was a drought year. I hadn't thought about it, but you're right. I started in the middle of that, too, July 1 of 2012.
We didn't get any rain in that year.
Is that right?
No.
You can almost date people in this job by what drought they talk about. Yesterday somebody talked about, 12. I thought, 12. And then I remember 5, 2001, 99. For me, I can go back to 83 through 87. Those were all dry.
Now, if you've got an area like Webster County getting the rain and other people aren't, my grandfather would have said they must be living right there.
Well, that's what David's been saying all along.
Paying the preacher.
He says, we pay the preacher enough, is what he says.
Yeah, something like it.
I remember way back in the day when you were an extension intern, and you've come a long, long way since then. What I consider one of our most valuable resources as far as specialists goes. We're blessed with a lot of good ones here at the University of Kentucky, but the things you've done and the impact you've had on the producers has been great, and we certainly appreciate that.
Well, appreciate you saying that. I was a summer intern in Woodford County, mm-hmm. So a county west of here where we are today recording this, in the summer of 99. And in all fairness, I spent some with Mike Duckworth that mm-hmm. summer. Don't know that I would have gotten into extension had I not spent that summer in Woodford County. Mm-hmm. And right. I'm so glad I did, because I think I've been blessed to get to do what I've done for so long.
Yep. That same summer, I had an intern who's now Dr. Quentin Tyler. He's at Michigan mm-hmm. State University with extension up there. And I wonder how many of that intern class turned out to be PhDs. That'd be an interesting fact to know, I think.
I think, though, with the experience that you've had, though, being an intern – and then being an extension associate for some of those years and working, because you said you worked on your graduate work part-time, And then obviously been faculty member since 2012. You've really gotten a bird's eye view, though, of extension, mm-hmm. and particularly working with agents. You know, you have a view that maybe some of the other specialists haven't had, just because of how you started in the system. You know, so.
Well, I hope so, and I think for any you know, specialist or faculty member, I think the better you understand the role the agents have, the more you appreciate the work that they do, and I think the better effective the partnership can be between the specialist and the agent, which is to me what makes our system so valuable, frankly.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
I agree.
So. Well, we're here today to talk a little bit about cattle marketing, and I think before we get to our topic, maybe let's review some things that, you know, that we need to be thinking about from a cattle marketing standpoint. What are some decisions or goals that we need to have in our operation? We talk about goals all the time and having those goals. What are some of the things we need to consider when we're talking about marketing plan for our cattle?
Good question. And of course, you know, some of that's dictated by things outside of our control, right? You know, the first thing you think about is, you know, what type of cow herd do I want to have? You know, how many cows do I want to run in terms of stocking rate? And then, you know, that kind of dictates in terms of what does my winter feeding system look like? And then we start thinking about, you know, fall of the year where we are now, we're recording this, what, third week of October, you know, we're at what's kind of a normal weaning time. Now, of course, given the dry weather in most parts of the state, maybe not in Webster County, but some parts of the state, it's been fairly dry. So some of our decisions have been made already for us. But, you know, that decision about calving time and that decision about weaning time and then what to do with calves post-weaning is oftentimes the first decision that a cow-calf operator, he or her, has to make, right? So, you know, something like that's always important to think about. And, you know, granted, production weather dictates some of that. But, you know, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that, you know, preconditioning calves and, you know, not selling green calves off the cow adds value. You know, and I will argue that if you look at the market reports and what value-added cattle bring, there's value there. And, you know, in a year like this when feed prices are high and feed is fairly scarce, it's easy sometimes to look at feed costs and say, you know what, I can't afford to keep these calves longer. But the truth is the markets kind of adjust to that and value again goes up. In reality, we put together our winter backgrounding assessment article that'll come out, I guess, next week in the Duncan policy update. And, you know, despite feed prices where they are, the market's adjusted some, and there's still mm-hmm. potential, you know, to put some weight on calves profitably this winter. So, you know, so many things change. I think that's the key, and in my opinion, Dave, is just don't make decisions today based on rules of thumb or what you might have done the last 10 or 15 years, because everything's different every year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you've really got to sharpen the pencil and really think through decisions and really, you know, work through a typical economist here, but work through a budget. That's the only way to really know about profitability. You know, is don't just focus on one or two items. Think about the whole system.
Yeah, and you got to be flexible too. You know, when you're talking about all those decisions, you know, whether you do keep those calves and feed those calves out or whether you're going to be spring calving, fall calving, you know, all those decisions, you need to be kind of flexible on some of that stuff.
No question. And sometimes I'll share this in extension audiences, but, you know, we think about those things that we typically think of as opportunities to add value. So, you know, preconditioning is certainly one, you know. Selling steers instead of bulls is another one. And, you know, it's funny, in years when the market is strong, I'll hear some people say, you know, if they're paying that much for bulls, I'm not going to bother selling steers. If the market's down, they'll say, if they're only paying that much, right? Yeah. And, you know, it's one of those things, you know, year in and year out, you've got to do what works for your, you know, for your operation. And, you know, whether we're talking about preconditioning or whether we're talking about, you know, selling steers instead of bulls, understand there are producers whose business model is to buy some of those calves, right, that needed a bit more attention, right? Yeah, add value that way, you know, group them and then sell them back. So value gets added to calves. The question is who's going to do it?
Yeah.
And that's really the question for, you know, most cow-calf operators and margin operators too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, I had an opportunity to fill in for a friend of mine he has a morning ag report, and I had an opportunity to do the market report. And several of the comments on several that 2 weeks that I got to fill in, you know, they made in the comments were heavily discounted on balling calves. And, I mean, you precondition your calves is, I mean, I think that adds money. And you're not necessarily making money on a calf, but you're making money on the gain that you put on those calves.
Absolutely.
You know, when the money you've invested in the feed, that's where you're making your money.
Both are important. There's, you know, there's the fact that they are worth a bit more per pound in most markets. But yeah, the real advantage is that you're selling more pounds at the end too. And you know, it's, you know, I always said the best protection against market drops is value gain, right? So, you know, adding pounds and adding efficiently is key. And when we think about that premium for, you know, non-green calves, preconditioned calves, wean calves, you know, there's a seasonal element to that too, right? So we're recording this late fall. You know, ideally it would be wet right now. I guess it's not been, right? But ideally it would be wet in the fall and we have some swings in temperature. And we think about calves that get moved a large distance from Kentucky to major cattle feeding areas. That's a stressor, right? Mm-hmm. So the healthier those calves are when they leave this state and go into feeding programs, the better shape they're going to be in when they get there.
Yeah, you know, and I think for the last several years, I mean, I think the producers in Kentucky have done a much better job. The reputation of those cattle going out west has been much, much better. And I think simply because, I mean, we're doing some preconditioning throughout, you know, as we wean those calves, we're doing some, trying to add some value to those calves.
It's been one of my sales points when we talk about, well, like CPH sales, for instance, that we have here in the state. Everybody, every producer who's ever been wants to know, well, what kind of premiums they're going to be. And to me, my selling point has always been, a lot of times there is a premium. But despite that, you're going to be selling a heavier, healthier calf by going through this preconditioning program. That's going to be good for you. That's going to be good for the feeders. That's good for everybody. Those cattle are going to perform better once they leave your farm. And to that point, it's going to help the market all the way around. So everybody wants to think about what the dollar is today, but
right.
We're in this as a long game usually.
Yep. And that's one of the cattle business is not one of those things you can jump in and out of. You're in for the long haul or you're not going to be in long one way or the other. So, yeah, I agree with that 100%.
And absolutely. I think, too, if you're just getting in the cattle business or you're thinking about getting in the cattle business, you know, get your ducks in a row ahead of time before you get there. But then also, you know, start small. I mean, I think that sometimes it's like we're going to go big or go home. And oftentimes, if you go too big, you're going home. And so, you know, make sure that you do that homework ahead of time and be ready for that, because you can always expand as long as you have the resources to do that, the ground to do that. But
I think you can apply that to marketing cattle in general, not just the production standpoint, but marketing.
Right. Yeah.
We need to be diversified in our marketing approaches, not just, you know, putting them all on the trailer at the same time and taking them to the local stockyards. A cattle sale or selling cattle and marketing cattle are two different things. So,
yeah, I agree with that. And can you talk with us a little bit? You know, we've talked about maybe the end game a little bit, but talk with us a little bit about some of the budgets that y'all have available to producers, I think, which is very important when we're talking about cow-calf or we're talking about stocker calves. Or talk with us a little bit about those budgets and where they can be found.
So from the Ag Econ website, which is actually pretty easy to find, it's basically agecon.uky.edu, and it's easy to find via searching as well. Well, we've always had for years our standard set of beef budgets, which includes both the spring and fall calving cow-calf budget, and then also includes what we kind of generically call a background or feed-based type growing budget. At the same time, more of a forage-based kind of a stocker-type budget. So that's kind of the core of our budgets. But while you're on there looking around, I always tell folks, you know, poke around at some of those decision aids, because we've got some other things that are a bit more tailored. For example, back in 2015, Greg Hallett and Samantha Kinder and I put together a tool that's designed to help you evaluate what you can pay for, what you can spend developing a bred heifer, given an expectation of long-run prices, right? And I think that's going to be a relevant discussion here as this calf market moves up the next few years, you know, things like that. We've got tools that are more geared towards grazing, more towards winter feeding, more towards fencing decisions. So, you know, the budgets are there and they're going to be the core of what you need, but there's also some things that are tailored to more specific decisions that you might make on the farm that'll help you kind of give you more, the best way I like to describe it is, if you do a good job entering the data that it asks for, it'll give you a nice objective estimate of what it's going to look like, right? And it takes the emotions out, which oftentimes I think that's what an economist sometimes brings to the table is. We try and take the emotions out and just look at the dollars and cents, and then you decide from there.
Yeah.
I appreciate you plugging those decision-making tools, because I think back in my career, recently we recorded a show with Jordan Shockley, and I made the statement to him, I'll say it to you the same way. As an agent, those have been some of the most useful tools over the years, and they've changed, they've morphed to meet the times, but from a decision-making standpoint, it's been one of the most useful tools I've had as an agent to help me. And we appreciate the Ag and Econ Department for that.
Well, thanks.
And I think those tools, too, they cause producers to think about things that they otherwise don't think of, because they don't, you know, you don't always think about your time and your worth, you know, and some of those kinds of things. But it's just, you know, I think it just gets them to really thinking realistically.
Yeah, and you got to have, if you put in good information, you'll get good information back.
That's right.
So if you want to put in good, honest information, you know, and this doesn't have anything to do with the cattle market, but this is an example of when people talk about how much a roll of hay costs. They have not sat down and figured out fertilizer and their time and their equipment and all of those things, and which are available on the Ag Econ website. But they haven't sat down and figured all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So they don't have good information, and they're selling their hay for $35. I mean, they probably got $70 worth of fertilizer, and if they put any fertilizer at all in the last year or so, for sure. So, you know, you need to put in good information, then you get good information back.
That's right.
Yep.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
So, Kenny, we want to talk a little bit about you know, the cattle market and that relationship that, you know, the corn market has with the, or I say corn market, the grain prices in general have with cattle market prices. What do we need to know about those relationships?
Yeah, so, you know, we're in obviously a feeder cattle state. So, well, we've got some cattle to get finished in Kentucky, of course, and that's growing, you know, by all means. But, you know, we're largely a feeder cattle state, cow-calf, backgrounding, stocker-type operation. So, the vast majority of our cattle are going to leave Kentucky, and they're going to go somewhere to be placed on full feed. So, you know, feed prices, and we can talk about corn, because corn kind of tends to drive that market, right? As corn goes, so do pretty much all other feeds out there, in a sense. They're, you know, they're kind of priced on a substitute basis, right? So they'll tend to move together. But that's, you know, that's an expense, that's an input to a cattle finishing enterprise. If I'm a feed yard, you know, feed is going to be the biggest expense I have, with the exception of the steer heifer that I place on feed. So as those feed prices go up, the cost to finish those cattle goes up, and then that puts downward pressure on feeder cattle price, holding everything else constant. So the relationship on one hand is fairly simple, and that's that holding everything else constant, as feed prices increase, we tend to see feeder cattle price decrease, and vice versa. The problem, of course, is we're hardly ever holding everything else constant, right? You know, years ago, you could kind of think about it that way. You know, if you had a situation where only grain prices are impacted and nothing else is, it's that simple, but that's not oftentimes the case. So you get in situations where, you know, maybe there's a macroeconomic event that has a negative impact on not just, you know, grain prices, also though maybe, you know, retail beef prices. Or something like that. So sometimes there's multiple things affecting cattle prices at the same time. So sometimes you'll see feeder cattle prices actually move the same direction as corn, but it's oftentimes because one of those other factors affected it different than corn did. So that's kind of first thing to think about, is that, yeah, there's the basic negative relationship, but you've also got the fact that, you know, we joke as economists because, you know, when we analyze things statistically, we hold everything constant, but that didn't work in reality very often, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's also kind of there's the element with feed prices involving the size of the cattle in the season, right? So you think fall of the year, you know, we're not in a grazing time period. So, you know, really your calf markets and your heavy feeder markets are both going to be impacted similarly by feed prices. Because in reality, you know, even those calves that are weaned this time of year, there's not, you know, save wheat grazing, obviously, you know, there's not a lot of grazing potential for those calves at this time of year. So they're both impacted by feed price the same way. In fact, the calf market may even be more sensitive, right? Because you've got to add more pounds to those calves that are going to be placed on feed versus heavy feeders. The opposite, though, is true in the spring, right? When we think about, you know, calves that are born in the fall, weaned in the spring of the year when I've got pasture coming on, and you know, we're a large grazing state in Kentucky, sometimes that calf market hardly responds to feed prices at all in the spring of the year, because the real driver there is, okay, what's it look like if I place those calves in some sort of grazing program and then sell heavy feeders this fall? So there's a seasonal element to it, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so, Thinking about grain, that being our topic right now, as far as one of those major factors, we see different factors that affect cattle market prices seasonally. We see them. You mentioned some of the macroeconomic factors. What are some of those right now that you see as a player in the market influence right now?
We've had a lot of things recently, of course, and I think you know right now we're in a time period where we've got a lot of inflation. Obviously, that's on people's minds. You know, we're seeing inflation at a lot of levels, obviously, but also at the cost level. That has an impact. You know, the war in Ukraine obviously is something that will kind of outside of the normal thing we think about in the cattle markets. And, you know, from a trade perspective, there's not a lot of impact there. We don't export much beef to that area. But there's impact, like we talked about, on the grain side, you know, supply chain, things like that impact those markets. So we've just had, honestly, if you really go back, and I kind of like to say it almost started in summer of 2019 with that fire in the Holcomb, Kansas mm-hmm. plant. You know, mm-hmm. that plant, 4.5-5% of U.S. beef production came out of that plant. That was summer of 19. And then it was COVID, you know, in 2020, which, you know, lasted for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, if you really, you know, go back and think about summer of 2020, although we were focused on COVID, from the summer of 2020 to summer of 2021, corn price essentially doubled, right? Mm-hmm. That was a shock to the cattle market. We've just had one thing after another, it seems like. And we got massive drought in a good chunk of cattle country right now as we talk.
You know, one of the things it's hard to get people, especially consumers, to get a grasp on when you talk about all these factors that are typically negative factors on cattle market prices, they don't necessarily see that reflected as a negative in beef prices at the grocery store. We're at a pretty high level right now compared to all other things.
If you look at retail beef price, and let's think, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, you know, tracks a series there. But yeah, we've seen a little bit of pullback in beef price, but not near that much. We've seen some very high beef prices, and this honestly goes back, I think, to, you know, to kind of the COVID time period. You know, absolutely. When we had some supply disruption. You know, we did through several different means inject some money into the economy, which had folks kind of chasing smaller amount of goods, and those prices have stayed fairly high.
Tell us, talk with us a little bit about, you know, we're talking about COVID a little bit, that period of time. Talk with us a little bit about how that changed the marketing of some of these cattle that we've gone to, some home processors or some smaller processors. Tell us, kind of talk with us about how that market changed a little bit.
That's a great question and a fun thing to talk about, actually. I enjoy doing that kind of stuff. But, you know, we'd always had, you know, a significant number of producers that did some direct marketing. And, you know, in most cases, that was freezer beef and selling sides and quarters. But you had some folks that were, you know, reaching to restaurant markets and farmers markets and CSAs and things like that. And I can remember, you know, when there was concern about supply of meat for a period of time. And more folks became interested in sourcing meat directly from producers. The truth is, we were always, you know, even pre-COVID, we were a bit short on that local processing capacity in Kentucky. You know, I never thought we had quite enough processors to do kind of the custom work to help producers reach local markets. But the demand picked up so much post-COVID that we really, really realized just how short packing capacity was at the state level. And I'll admit my own error here. I would have bet money that would have backed off some, by mm-hmm. the end of 2020 or by 2021. And I got to be honest with you, I don't know that it has. I think it got a lot of direct marketers foot in the door, if you will, with mm-hmm. some consumers. Mm-hmm. And I think they liked what they got.
Sure.
And, you know, we've actually expanded Kentucky processing capacity quite a bit over the last, you know, I don't know, 12 months or so, and we're still doing so. But we need it. I mean, the demand and market's there.
I think I'll pile on to that comment just a little bit. We were seeing a growth in the demand of local products pre-COVID. And I think COVID was just an added driver to that. It was a shot in the arm that local movement kindly was already headed in that direction. And just because we grew out of COVID, we're not wearing masks anymore right now. That's all a good thing. But that's one thing that has not tailed off, is we have seen that still increase. You know, I see it in a lot of other ways, but like local vegetable production. We all as agents have people coming to us for garden information. Mm-hmm. It was an immediate thing that early in that COVID year, it hadn't backed off. We're seeing a lot more of that local type production. And that just goes along with what you're saying.
Yeah, I think you've seen in the last month or two, I think you've seen those the lines at the getting dates for slaughter dates for those animals. I think you've seen those ease just a bit. Yeah, just a bit. I mean, not a lot, but just a bit. And I actually called the other day to one of the local ones there to my house, and they were able to get me in January. So I was pretty tickled with that. One that had expanded their operation some there, so they've got more cooler space and that type of thing. So, I mean, due to a lot of this things going on.
That shortening in those lines, I wonder if that is due to less of an influence or less of an interest in local production, or is that inflation really stifling folks to the point that we just can't buy a side of beef right now? We've got to buy this week's hamburger. Yep.
I think I work with the farmers market in Webster County, and we've really seen an increase. We started seeing that during COVID, but that has continued to go up. And this year, this summer in particularly, we've had an increase in those folks coming to the farmers market to buy beef every week, or pork. We've got both. And, you typically think about a farmers market coming and getting the fresh produce, and that is still happening. Like Jay said, that's still happening, but it's increasing. And I think it's consumers have gotten used to that, driving just a short distance and be able to get good quality meat for the week. Then you don't have to worry about the freezer space. You don't have to worry about like you said, the when you buy a side or a quarter or a half or whatever, that's a chunk of money. It's still a good thing to do, but it's still, you've got to be able to do that, and they like that at the farmer's market.
That's the biggest challenge with sides and quarters, Becky. I agree completely that you've got two things. You're fighting a lot of cash outlay to begin with, and from the producer perspective, you can't really risk not collecting up front, so I understand that piece. But then, I'd really like to know what percent of households have a deep freeze. It's higher now than it was pre-COVID, but I think it's still pretty small.
Yeah.
But this is a win-win, right? It's a way for producers to add value to livestock. It connects consumers to producers. The other thing, though, I'll mention, we do some freezer beef on a small scale, and I really enjoy doing it. I love getting to see it from start to finish. And I think that's the piece that gets underestimated sometimes, is how much a producer learns about their livestock when they truly go all the way to finishing, and then they see it sitting in the meat case or in the freezer, in the cooler. There's a lot of value there. And I think we underestimate sometimes just how much you learn by seeing it all the way through.
And you want your product to be the very best that it can be. And when you see it through like that, I mean, everything from packaging it, what the label looks like, all the way through, and you want it to be the best that it can be. That's exactly right.
You mentioned producers learning more about their operation. They learn a lot more about consumer interest too, whenever they're direct marketing that product.
I mean, and we're getting cattle that grade choice and prime and different things like that, which is what you want. But if you've never slaughtered one of your own animals, you never know what that is. So I think that's some valuable information that you're talking about.
That's something I still struggle with, and I'm sure most producers do too. Growing up in a feeder cattle state, I was never used to knowing what finished cattle look like, right? And it just takes a while to develop that eye, and you're still surprised sometimes, right?
Yep, absolutely.
But we're just not used to seeing finished cattle as much, on this end of the state for sure, and you learn a lot that way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's the, getting that type of information, and, if you could get the slaughter data back as producer, if you could get that back from the packer, which they're not very interested in giving you that data. And I'm not sure why, because we're just trying to make better calves and that finish better.
Sure.
But they're just not very interested in giving that information back. And, the only way to kind of get some of that is to either, do a little bit of freezer beef just to see where you're getting and where you're at.
We used to have the fax program years ago, and that was one of those programs that was successful in being able to get some of that information back. But it's we've had agents across the state. One, Doug Shepherd, is one that I'm think about that has some programs like that going along and works with producers and is able to get some of that useful information back. And being able to get that back and then being able to interpret it and implement it into your operations is a different thing.
Yeah, I think all of these things that we've been talking about, you know, are great tools to get information back to your operation to make better marketing decisions. You know, if you have cattle that grade prime all the time, then you need to be doing this freezer beef thing. I mean, you know, really, I mean, you need to be doing the freezer beef deal. And so that goes back to making those marketing decisions. If you've got calves that grade select, you need to be in a different program than somebody that has cattle that finish better than that.
And I think the freezer beef part, too, it just gives – you're not putting all your eggs in one basket. I mean, with any kind of marketing plan, regardless of what it is, you don't need to put all your eggs in one basket. And this freezer beef, I think, is just giving another opportunity for just a different way to market your product and getting cash flow at a different time.
Vicki said it really well a little bit earlier when she talked about how it's important to start small in most anything. And I think freezer beef is a really good example of when you almost have to start small. If you want to see me get nervous, watch me when a farmer comes up to me after a meeting and says, yeah, I thought I'd try some freezer beef this year. I have 25 steers on feed. I know where that's going and it's going to be pretty, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Moving five or six will work you to death. So.
Yeah. I worked with a producer years ago, and David knows who I'm talking about, who started a little freezer beef deal and was able to put together just a very small program like you're talking about. He did start small, was able, after he got his feet under him and knew what he was doing and had developed that market. I had a pork producer that was wanting to do the same thing, except he was wanting to open a retail butcher shop. And I was able to get the two of them together and the beef producer supply the beef for this guy. In the earliest days, their understanding was is he was going to supply a beef a month, and we'll see how it goes. I was talking with his son just, I don't know, a month or so ago, and now they're furnishing 3 to 4 a week. So that they started small. They were able to develop that. That grew past just the freezer beef deal, though, and into a retail outlet, which was good for both producers.
Absolutely.
And those are kind of niche markets, too, that folks – everybody's not going to be able to be in that market, you know. Right. So some of us have to sell feeder calves, and some folks are finishing beef, and that's what makes our marketing what it is. I mean, you know, makes our industry what it is, and being able to be diversified and to be different than the next person.
Talking about that producer in general, one of the biggest things he had to get past, and as an extension person, this because kind of makes you proud. One of the biggest things he had to get past in growing past a freezer beef here or there was he needed that supply year-round, which meant going back to a year-round calving season. And he did not do that. He couldn't do that. He had worked too hard to get away from that, but he's buying cattle. And that's how he's filling in that marketing and taking advantage of those situations where people do have calves year-round for him to put on feed.
Yeah, naturally, when you have a set of cows, all cows are not genetically the same. So you're going to have some calves that are going to finish earlier than other calves. But on a large scale, like Jay's talking about, I mean, there's no way to have and hold those calves that for that length of time to get them to, you know, when their calf is finished, it's finished. It, you know, it needs to go to the rail.
And the next obstacle he had buying cattle was buying cattle of the same quality that he was producing. That was a real challenge.
Yeah. And learning those cattle and how they finish is something else that, you know, he had to learn. So there's so many obstacles. When we're talking about marketing cattle, I mean, there's a plethora of challenges when you're starting to talk about, you know, marketing and, you know, are you a small producer or are you a larger producer? Larger producers can sell in load lots, you know, which makes – that gives them an advantage, which is, you know, being the size that some folks are, they can do that. Smaller folks may take the opportunity to take advantage of CPH sales and, you know, or other types of preconditioned programs that they can market their cattle in. And, you know, in the grain market, to bring all this back, the grain market, I mean, it kind of drives feed prices. So that kind of determines whether you're going to be able to feed those cattle or whether you're, you know, be able to precondition them for a certain length of time.
Absolutely. Vicki, I think we need to add a new segment to this show, and it's David's big word of the day, plethora.
I like that.
That's a good one, isn't it?
That's a good one. Yes, that's a good one.
No, but you're exactly right. It's one of those things that we all need to keep to the forefront when we're thinking of things and making decisions. So that'll roll us right into this week's timely tip. This is something we do, Kenny, every week. We try to come up with something pertinent for producers to listen to that's going to be adding to their time of the year. The show will be running next week, so we felt like a good timely tip would be to start following the cattle market and its trends, and as a cattle marketing strategy, use that in making decisions for the future. So what would you like to add to that?
I guess I'll do two things. So the first thing I always tell people is you want to keep an eye on your local markets. You know, first, that's probably most important of all, you know. So wherever it is, the markets that are closest to you, watch those closely. We've got a great set of market reporters in the state that do an outstanding job with the Ag Marketing Service. And, you know, there is good data from virtually all of our markets. So make a habit every week or every sale day. Just review those and see what they look like. They're published usually the evening of the sale. Secondly, I encourage folks to watch the futures market because, you know, when you think about your feeder cattle futures, think 800-pound steer out west. Live cattle futures, think finished steer out west. But you also want to know, okay, what does the futures market say about the trends that are likely to occur in this example, the feeder cattle markets, right? So right now there's an October feeder cattle futures contract trading. You know, there's also one for November, one for January, March, April. And in its purest, simplest form, you can think of those as price forecast, right? You know, whatever that trend is between the current futures price and what, let's say, spring is trading at, that tells you what the expectation is for those heavy feeders between now and that time period. So there's value there. And then, so can I plug one shameless plug for a project of mine?
Yeah. Absolutely.
I would encourage everybody to sign up for Cattle Market Notes Weekly. And this is something every week that I partner with two of my colleagues on. Myself, Josh Maples, Mississippi State, and James Mitchell, University of Arkansas. I started doing, you probably remember this, during COVID, I started doing a weekly market update. Mm-hmm. And, you know, keep in mind, I'm a very delivery-oriented extension specialist. I like to be out in the state talking to farmers, doing programs, and I couldn't do that for a period of time. So one of the things I wanted to do was just do a market report every week so I could communicate with you all, you with your producers, regularly. As extension picked back up and I got back in the classroom and so forth, it was hard to do that weekly. So the three of us partner such that every third week one of us writes, but every week our clientele gets something. So if you want to get on Cattle Market Notes Weekly, that comes out Monday afternoons. It'll have, you know, have price charts for the Southeast and other states. It'll usually have, you know, some discussion of market trends or something like that. There'll be a drought monitor. And I always kind of plug it this way, too, because I'm in Kentucky, Josh is in Mississippi State, and James is in Arkansas. It tends to be a little bit more cow-calf and feeder cattle-oriented than some of the other things out there. We'll talk about fed cattle sometimes. But we also focus more than probably the others on feeder cattle and calves.
Sounds good. Where can that information be found at?
The URL is really long. I'm not going to try and recite it here. However, if you will reach out to me, I can get you on. It's Cattle Market Notes Weekly, and if you can search that, you can simply go to sign up. But if you have any trouble, reach out to me or your county agent.
If you'll let us have that information after the fact, send it to us via email. We'll make sure and plug the links into our show notes, and that'll folks will get it that way as well.
That works perfect.
Good deal.
Yeah, I mean, being able to have that the access to that information, I think, is just invaluable for folks that are trying to do the best they can in marketing their cattle. I mean, that's invaluable information.
It helps agents out a lot, too, in our regular answering questions for folks. Even if it's just coffee shop talk, being able to converse with producers on that subject and keep them that information is a really big help. I know I started, when I came back into an agent's role, I made an Outlook folder in my email, and every week when those come in, I just shoot them straight in there, and I can go back and compare week to week that way. So,
yeah, there's no telling how many times that people will sit down in my office and go, well, how's the CPHA going to be in December? Put you right on the spot there, you know. He said, what the price is going to be? We'll have to do a little bit of research to find out maybe the trends are. But
I'd flip that question around and ask him how much weight he had put on those calves by preconditioning them.
Yeah, well, it's hard to do that when you're getting them right off the cow, my friend. So
that's exactly right. You know, there's a need in the market for all types of calves. And
that's right. I mean, you know, somebody – And Kenny was right when he was talking about those stalker guys. I mean, they're trying to take a product and make a better product out of it. And, you know, somebody's mismanagement is somebody else's.
Or lack of management. They're just not doing it.
Right.
Selling exactly. bulls off the cow.
That's how they make their money. I mean, that's what drives our market. I mean, it's a great program. And folks that don't want to work, there's somebody else that wants to do that work to help in marketing. So.
Exactly right. Well, if anybody doesn't have anything else to add, I think we'll just look at wrapping it up right there. Kenny, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate all the work you do, but we especially appreciate you sitting down with us while we happen to be in Lexington. And it's a
well, thanks so much for having me. I enjoyed talking with the three of you. And by all means, thanks for all that you do for Kentucky agriculture and your clientele.
Every day.
I appreciate you.
We appreciate you, and we want to thank our hosts for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.